We're going to spend a few minutes today touching down in the Arab world. Coming up, a handful of Saudi Arabian women quietly defied the country's ban on female drivers today. But we begin in Libya, where NATO warplanes struck the capital city of Tripoli again today, as the offensive against Muammar Gaddafi approaches the three-month mark. The fighting also continues between the rebels and the forces loyal to Gaddafi. The NATO attack started in March under a United Nations resolution designed to protect Libyan civilians. This was after anti-Gaddafi protests started in February, another sign of the Arab Spring. But that uprising has turned into a civil war with no clear conclusion in sight. The BBC's Middle East editor, Jeremy Bowen, is in the capital city, Tripoli. And Jeremy, is there some significance to the fact that these latest raids are happening in the daytime now? The attacks in the past have happened at night. What's the difference?
I think the difference is psychological more than anything else. I think that in terms of Libya's military capacity, the fact that these planes are operating in daylight hours rather than nighttime hours, you know, I don't think they can actually shoot them down. They're very, very high in the sky. You know, it's not World War II anymore. The fact is that these very sophisticated warplanes up there have so much more capacity than anything the Libyans have. I think it's more a question of changing the pressure on the people here and on the city and especially on the regime.
Well, we keep hearing that NATO is ramping up this pressure on Gaddafi, but from the outside, that doesn't seem to be working. You're in Tripoli. What do you think?
Well, I think from the inside, it doesn't seem to be working either. I think that NATO people have been briefing in quite an optimistic way to journalists, some of whom have been passing it on, and I don't think that is necessarily borne out by what's happening here. It's very hard to tell. There are real restrictions on my freedom of movement and the freedom of movement of other reporters in this city, really serious restrictions. But I've been in a lot of cities over the years where regimes are falling apart, and this doesn't have that kind of feel about it. Equally, they're not getting all that significant military pressure from the rebel side on the ground. Yes, they're getting pressure, and yes, rebels have taken ground, especially around Misrata, where they're pushing out the perimeter there. But nothing at this point which seems to be a direct military threat to this very large city controlled by the regime, a city of a couple of million people.
You spoke to a Western diplomat who said they're trying to find that X factor that will really force Gaddafi's hand in this conflict. What's he talking about?
Well, I think what he was trying to say was that if you look back to end of February when all the protests first started, there were people out on the streets. I mean, when I first came here, you could go out, you could sneak out of this hotel and find your way around to protesters who would be doing marches. Which would then be broken up by the police, sometimes with live ammunition. Now, that was a time when they hadn't really taken a big grip of Tripoli, what they have now. And they really have had it like that since the beginning of March. So while I'm sure there are plenty of people here who are really against the regime, there are also people who actively support it. And there are, my assessment is that there are a fair number of people in the middle as well who are worried about war, who are worried about instability, who are trying to have a quiet life.
Well, where have the protesters gone?
They're still there, and you can, as journalists, talk to them a bit, but it's very hard to get hold of people. There's been a reign of terror. A lot of people hauled off to prison, some people who've disappeared, others who've been killed on the streets when they were trying to demonstrate. You know, one of the big differences between here and say Egypt, where I was in February and in January and February when all that was going on, was that there the army stepped in and protected the protesters from the regime. There's been nothing like that here because there's a different structure. The military is made up in a different kind of way. So the protesters, when they were on the streets, were very much on their own. And that worked in the eastern side of the country where there's a big groundswell of anti-regime support.
In Misrata.
But around here on the west, well, Misrata also in Benghazi, for much, much further east. And here in the west, in the main, it's the regime's power base. And while there were protests, and while I'm sure there are plenty of people around the city who really hate Gaddafi, and if he was overthrown, would probably get on the streets and celebrate, at the moment, they don't see it's worth their while and worth the danger of getting out there and trying to protest safety of numbers. Not even anything like there's been in Syria. In Syria, they're killing people. They are today again, I think. But large numbers of protesters are marching on the streets in some places. That isn't replicated here in Tripoli.
So then how realistic is a rebel assault on Tripoli? Because we heard reports earlier this week that the rebels were moving slowly out of Misrata and toward Tripoli.
Well, they are. They're inching forward there. And they've got air protection, of course, and effectively close air support from NATO. But an assault on a city of 2 million people, I don't really see it. The only way this place would fall would be from within, unless they're planning something here, unless they've got some resources to start fighting a guerrilla war from within the city, then I don't see how they're going to do it in any conceivable way, in any conceivable time frame.
What can you tell us, Jeremy, about what's going on in the other parts of Libya? It seems like the rebels control the east, Gaddafi has the west, and there's no progress in either direction, even with all this NATO pressure. Are we at a true stalemate now?
Well, there's been some movement, as we've been discussing, around Misrata, which is in the western side of Libya, but it's an enclave which has got bigger. Rebels aren't doing badly there. They're being supplied by sea. In the western mountains, west of Libya, up towards the Tunisian border, there's been some activity there, and local people pushing down, who are against the regime, pushing down towards Tripoli. That in some ways seems to be a bit more potent than what's happening around Misrata, actually, but it's not widely reported. But this is a country, it's a huge country, but it's a country of only 6 million people. A third of the population live here in Tripoli. And Tripoli is, it's a Friday, it's day of prayer. I'm talking to you in early afternoon, local time, and it's quiet. It really is quiet at the moment. The occasional bombing raid from NATO is all that's breaking the silence, as far as I can tell from here.
We're speaking to the BBC's Middle East editor, Jeremy Bowen. He's in Tripoli, where there were more NATO airstrikes against Muammar Gaddafi's stronghold today. And Jeremy, we've been talking about the military operations, but are there any diplomatic options here? President Obama and other Western leaders insist the goal is to get rid of Gaddafi. Are there any other solutions that would be acceptable to both sides, some sort of compromise?
Well, I think that because the Americans and Britain and France have come out so strongly and repeatedly for regime change here, it means that in practice there's a very limited palette of diplomatic options, maybe none, actually. There was a Russian envoy here yesterday. Russians are very important in this. They're a member of the Security Council. They're influential. And I spoke to him. He was talking in terms of some kind of a solution where Colonel Gaddafi gets to stay in the country, but there's a transfer of power onto the next thing. Now, Saif al-Islam, who is the most prominent son of Colonel Gaddafi, he used to be very visible, but he's pretty much disappeared recently, but he gave an interview earlier this week to an Italian newspaper, Corriere della Sera. And in that, he said effectively that his father's time, his era was over, and that Libya should move towards free elections. Now, could he deliver on that? Is he reliable in saying that? Can we believe him? Thing is, you could argue that you don't know all of that until you try. But the position of NATO is that, or certainly of those, the French, British, and the Americans, is that all sorts of talks can take place about the future. But first of all, Gaddafi and his sons have to go and really most likely leave the country and become part of history. Whereas on the regime side here, what they're saying is we can talk about all kinds of things, including free elections, but we don't want to just dump Gaddafi. There has to be some kind of at least a transition period, and he won't have to leave the country. And NATO's saying that's absolutely not on. So that's where they're stuck. And what the Russians need to try and do, or someone is trying to bridge that, but at the moment I don't see how it's possible.
Britain and France are really carrying the burden right now of NATO's military operation, and there's growing debate here in the U.S. about American involvement. Do you think Gaddafi's just trying to hold on, hoping the political will to keep this fight is going to evaporate?
Well, and I think that looking at the signals coming out of some NATO countries and out of the U.S., I think they're quite encouraged by that. I went to an absolutely long and quite interminable news conference yesterday by the Libyan Prime Minister, but one thing he did say was that they've been watching what's been going on in America, this debate in the Congress about whether or not the president should have invoked the War Powers Act. I think what that's telling them is that while Obama is sticking to his guns about what America is doing, the chances of America doing more are negligible. As for Britain and France, they're both up against economic problems, and sustaining this for them is difficult. Britain is in the process of making very large cuts in its military because of budgetary concerns. It scrapped its only aircraft carrier just weeks before all this started, and there's a lot of regret and recrimination about that. And there are real question marks being raised there about the sustainability of this operation. So it's, I think from the regime's point of view, they're looking at all of that, and it quite encourages them and makes them think, well, let's hang on a few more months. Let's see what happens. Maybe things will move in our direction.
And by the way, when's the last time anyone actually saw Gaddafi?
He appears on TV every now and then. The most recent one, I think he did a speech on local TV, and he also appeared, he appeared meeting the head of the International Chess Federation in the course
Why?
Of the last week or so.
Why was he meeting the head of the Chess Federation? It seems odd at this time.
He wasn't just meeting him. They had a game of chess.
Okay.
Maybe because the guy's a prominent Russian, and perhaps they were passing messages on, or maybe, I don't know.
Who won?
But anyway, the...
Well, who won?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure Colonel Gaddafi is a very good chess player. He's certainly showing a capacity for strategy here anyway, which means that you can look at his position and you think, well, he looked pretty desperate when this bombing started. NATO expected his regime obligingly to crumble, but it hasn't. It's been really badly dented. He's lost a son, killed in an air raid, and grandchildren, little kids. And that's said to have hurt him quite substantially. I mean, obviously on a human level. But he's still there. That's the thing. He is still there, and he's still hanging on. So if it comes to chess, maybe he's quite good at it.
Jeremy Bowen is the BBC's Middle East editor, speaking to us from Tripoli. Jeremy, thank you so much.
Thank you.